Welcome to 2024. The earth is a barren wasteland. You crawl out of your tent house and walk to the road to start your day running for your life from the millions of zombies that seem to always show up at the wrong time. You reload your shotgun with shells and check your quiver for your arrows so next time those zombies won't know what hit them. Wait. No, that's 2025. Sweet, we still got a year left at staring at our phones, scrolling Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and whatever horrendous thing that your favorite ex has done. You know, everyone's favorite ex, Elon Musk. Today, we're going to have some fun ending our and your year with the coming of People Who Faked Their Own Deaths Part 2. New year, new you.
I didn't see you there.
Something big is going on here.
From hunting ghosts to Bigfoot.
Paranormal, UFOs, true crime, and more.
We won't just be spouting articles.
I was researching for your entertainment.
The beginning of a new world.
The best guac you'll ever fucking eat.
True story.
It's basically like one day you walk outside and you see that the ants are playing with matches.
This is the Black Cat Report. See you on the other side.
Welcome to the Black Cat Report in episode 78. I am Joey, your host for this very special New Year's Eve evening, and with me today is the enigmatic, the energy-giving, the energy-taking, even-keeled, evil-eyed, entertaining man with a plan, Gil.
Hello, 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 everyone. I would like to reference my new name, which happens to be Bilbert Gently. It's a new year, new me. I'm going with the theme here.
I see it. You're killing it. The theme is already great.
My old self today, killed. Yeah.
Killed. Today, we're going to delve or take another stab at, or shall I say, maybe another leap into people who fake their own deaths. If you haven't listened to our first episode on this, then, well, go listen to it.
Yeah.
Not right now, but after you listen to this one.
Yeah.
Episode 39 is the episode. And, you know, just listen to it right after you finish this one. Well,
yeah.
Yeah.
You ain't got shit else to do.
Yeah, that's true. It's a new year, new you. Listen to more podcasts.
That's right.
More Black Cat Report. Yeah. Oh, so the references for this episode are listed in the show notes because it's honestly just a bunch of internet resources that I looked into it for, but it's going to be listed.
Joey, I do have a quick kind of a shout out. Not a full legitimate shout out, but it's
sure.
It's a listener shout out. Last week, we gave shout outs to listeners that have been supporting us, that just hopped on board, helped us meet goals for the podcast, all sorts of awesome people doing awesome things, right? This week, and I'm throwing it in there, I'm going to include a link to a custom form that anybody can fill out. If you want, we only have a limited amount of these. If you want a signed letter from Joey and I as a thank you for supporting us and being awesome and listening, along with a custom-made squonk sticker, hit us up. Fill out that form. It sounds sketchy to be like, give us your name and address, but like I don't know how else to ship a physical thing to somebody. So if you give us your name and your address, Joey and I, over the next couple days, we're going to be filling these out. We're going to be shipping them off to you. You should have them hopefully around the first week of January, end of the first week. That's what we're doing tomorrow. And so if you guys want one, hit us up. We have a limited number. I was only able to afford so many stamps. That shit's expensive. honestly, that was the
Very
most expensive part. But we got some really cute like custom Black Cat cards coming in the mail. And we really just want to say thanks. So fill it out. It's first come, first serve, right? Please take a moment to do that. It'll be right at the top of the show notes. I'll be removing the form after we run out. So if you go there and the link to go fill out the form is gone, well, keep listening to the show and we'll have giveaways again in the future, I'm sure.
Yeah. And I want to give a special shout out to the person who
served
Bilbert Gently today at Pizza Mind and gave such great service. Also, introducing me to a book called Magnolia, Passport to Magnolia, Passport of Magnolia.
Passport to Magnolia, Jacques Vallée.
Passport to Magnolia by Jacques Vallée. And I'm going to read that one. Gilbert has it on his shelf, so I'm going to read it. So thank you, Steve, for doing that.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Thank you, man. Well, let's get into it today. So as you know, last time we got into 3 to 4 people that were fake their own deaths. They, definitely people who approve that they fake their own deaths. There is definitely something that we try to make a caveat because you know, a lot of people say they could have faked their own death and, you know, they, all that kind of stuff where they died. There's like weird conspiracy theories. These are people that are proven to have faked their own deaths. And as we found out last time we did this, it's not illegal to fake your own death.
Totally illegal. You should do it.
And since it's a new year, new you, become the you you wanted to be. Well, the first person that we're going to talk about today did do that. He is, you know, he's an interesting character. And I had actually talked to Gil about this guy, and he had heard of him before. His name was Jerry Bibb Balasag. Those who are wrestling fans might know him as Mr. X. He was born on September 8th in 1955 in Biloxi, Mississippi. Side note, if you are into casinos, apparently Biloxi is the place you can go and burn a ton of money. And they also have a really cool looking lighthouse. Actually, the lighthouse is just basic white, and it just looks, I like lighthouses, so it's a cool lighthouse.
I'm learning things about you right now, Joey.
If I could have been a lighthouse keeper in another life, I might
have
been.
You are wearing a lighthouse keeper sweater at the moment, and I'm picking up the vibe. I'm picking up what you're putting down and shining and spinning all around.
Well, perfect. Yeah. Anyways, at around 13, his dad died of a heart attack, leaving his mother, Marjorie, to raise him. As Jerry grew up, he put all his effort into high school wrestling. Wrestling for his high school, Huntsville High School Cougars. And I actually did go find the actual name of the high school in 1973. Still the name today, because I love to research that stuff. Random, I know. But in 1973... he graduated high school. While he was wrestling in high school, he had caught the attention of promoters for the Southeastern Championship Wrestling League. So, obviously, he's like, I want to go train. So he moved to Florida and started training in 1974 to get his career off the ground. Well, when he returned from training back to his home, he'd also garnered interest from the University of Tampa wrestling team.
Mm.
I want to say the difference in wrestling at that time is very interesting. You know, and everyone knows, like, entertainment, the idea of the entertainment wrestling, right? The world, you know, world wrestling entertainment, you know, is what they call it. And, you know, amateur wrestling is like high school wrestling, college, Olympic wrestling is like completely different things. Way different, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, it's all fake. But then, like, you get into like WWF, WWC. www.com, you get into those organizations, and like that's where you get into the real shit.
Yeah. Well, at the moment, he and his mom couldn't afford to send him to college, so he decided to start wrestling professionally. Well, like I was saying earlier, there was a problem with this, and something interesting that I learned was that before 1989, wrestling was basically shown and promoted as an actual competition and not just entertainment.
Yeah.
Yeah, like people would go thinking that it was real and that they were actually not pre-described. It actually, Vince McMahon in 1989, the owner of the WWE, came out and said, we are not wrestling, we are entertainment. And it allowed him to classify it differently. So I forgot what exactly why. There's some reason why he did it so that he can make more money, really was the whole big deal.
Are you saying this is related to around the same time period that news companies switched over from being news companies, which have a whole set of standards and laws that are associated with them, and they switched over to entertainment, which gave them the ability to be as biased as they want? Are you trying to tell me that, Joey? Because I would
never try to make those connections between stories that we tell on here and things that are going on in the real world, too.
Cool. Just checking.
Yeah. It also made me remember, and being a kid watching, you know, the Hardy Boys, Edge and Christian, the Dudley Boys, all thinking that it was freaking real. Dude. And whoever won did better than the other. And also jumping off my couch onto my head on the floor of pillows and
multiple times
hurting myself. But yeah, silly kid me, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this meant that he couldn't be a professional wrestler and an amateur wrestler in college, because this was before it when he did it. So he couldn't do both.
Yeah.
So either he had to choose one
or
not be seen as a professional wrestler. Yeah. So this is the visage of where Mr. X came up. Mr. X is just a generic wrestler. Like, no joke, they have Mr. X's in most wrestling leagues, so they could have a guy just that's kind of like the bad guy, I guess. He's kind of the villain.
Yeah.
He's typically wearing like a red or white mask. and he could earn money while doing this and also still wrestle at college. So he did this for a year and saved up enough money to attend college.
Okay.
But somehow the info that he was doing that as Mr. X got out.
He left his parking pass on his window when he parked in the parking lot.
yeah. And as he went to the college to go to go take part in the team, the amateur wrestling, the college wrestling, he literally walked up and the guy and his coach was like, "Hey, you're not on the team. You can't do this because we know that you're doing professional wrestling."
Look, you're not allowed to be on our hyper-competitive team because you're a professional.
Yeah, right. You couldn't be a professional and an amateur. I thought it was just, it's so dumb. It's made
you're
me laugh.
So fucking good, you can't be here.
You're so fucking good at faking it that you can't be here where us real people are doing it. You're too good.
Yeah.
So, defeated, he left college and kept pro wrestling because he needed to get more money. He needed to keep making money.
Yeah.
Though he was wrestling professionally for about 2 years, he had trouble getting any traction because, he was masked and Mr. X theme was basically the villain.
Yeah.
And he was there to help, like, the, I guess, the good guy wrestlers look like they're overcoming this behemoth of a man.
Yeah.
He was 6'1". I mean, which is not that tall in wrestling, but he was also over 300 pounds. It's like, that's
okay,
big
that's
in wrestling.
That's the difference. I was going to say, I'm like, Joey, I think, like, I'm 6 foot. I'm pretty sure you're 6'1".
Yeah. 6 foot.
Like, we are incredibly tall podcasters. Yeah. We are behemoths of ourselves. But if you put both of us together, we wouldn't weigh as much as this dude.
Yeah, pretty much. This dude was crazy big. I mean, you know, damn. Like you look at Kane and Undertaker, and those are like some of the taller guys in this one.
Yeah.
He was, but they don't weigh 300 pounds. They're like 250, 260. And this guy was big. Well,
this is 300 of muscle.
Yeah. Oh, he was probably all muscle and beard, if you see his pictures too. Well, sadly, an accident was about to happen that would change his life. In January 1977, he had a motorcycle accident that broke his hip and caused numerous other injuries, which kind of put him out of wrestling for a while, so he couldn't wrestle.
So he had to become an amateur?
Well, not yet. The doctors had to place a pin in his hip, so he couldn't, you know, he's like, he had to recover, gave him a lot of time.
Yeah.
Well, as we stated before, that he was not able to attend Tampa College and be part of the wrestling team because he was pro wrestling. So the money he didn't use to go to college, he bought a motorcycle store. That's kind of how he was like, you know, how he was motorcycling, because he bought a motorcycle store to run.
Seems counterintuitive too. I just had a horrific motorcycle accident that ended my early career as a professional. You know what I'm going to do? Buy more motorcycles.
Yep. Well, while he was recovering, he really started focusing on the business of the motorcycle. So like he was sitting at home, he would go in and just kind of start working on the business, making it like
motorcycle-y. Yeah.
Yeah. He wasn't necessarily a clean businessman either, because that's kind of how we're going to get to this whole other part.
Okay.
To get parts for cheap and almost, I guess, free technically, he would write fraudulent checks to motorcycle part distributors in Caribbean countries, thinking in the Bahamas, Puerto Rico, etc., while he was wrestling in these places. So he would like go there while he's wrestling and he would just buy stuff, send it back, and write a crappy check to them. And
yeah.
I want to actually say this. I did not know that was actually illegal. Not that I've ever done that, but wait. I did not know writing checks overseas, bad checks, is actually illegal in the United States.
Joey, writing bad checks is notoriously illegal.
Well, in general, but I didn't know a federal government could go after you if you're like doing it in the Bahamas or doing it in Puerto Rico. That was my weird thing of it. But they actually can.
Also, like, there's like a weird... How do I put this? There's like a weird intimidation factor to knowing that the guy who wrote you the check is 6'1" and 300 pounds of muscle.
Yep.
You know? Where it's just like, do I really want to pursue this? You know, and you're just picturing him back in your shop in the Caribbean and he's just like, "Hey, brother, where do I sign the check at?"
Yeah. Like he's like, fucking, you know, scary.
It appears that he's coming on tour back in this same town in about 3 weeks.
And these people probably knew him too.
Do I really want to start litigation with this dude?
And these people knew his wrestling thing and were like, this guy's like huge. He also is probably he's pretty famous at this point in the wrestling scene. So if like they're going to it, they probably know it.
Yeah.
Feel like, you know, having motorcycles kind of connects to it as well. So like they probably had like sponsorships of motorcycle companies.
screams danger.
It's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, in 1977, the federal government indicted him on it and wanted to take him to trial. Lo and behold,
shit.
He had 13 counts of writing fraudulent checks over international lines. Each count would be 10 years in jail. So let's do some easy math there.
13,000 years in jail.
130 years in jail.
130 years in jail.
Close. You were very close. Well, obviously, he decided, I'm going to move on.
Yeah. Because that's what you're allowed to do in a legal case. You're just like, whoa. Consequences? You know what? I'm out. And everybody's like, damn it.
Yeah. He's just going to wrestle around him. So at this time, he was dating a woman named Deborah Kindred. And like a good boyfriend,
State Farm is there.
He told her. Yeah, that one too. Mr. X is there. He told her, well, I'm not going to jail for 130 years, so I'm going to leave. Do you want to join me? And like a good girlfriend, she's like,
yeah,
sure. Yeah, let's go. But to be fair, he wouldn't get very far without a new persona and obviously new identification because he can't really, he would just get stopped wherever he goes. They would find him. So
yeah,
they both broke into his girlfriend Kendrick's second cousin's house and stole all of their IDs.
Oh, no.
So security card, driver's license, birth certificate, you know? So he got everything.
Yeah.
And he had a new identity, right? So his new name was Ricky Allen Weta. Or Rawl.
Ricky Weta?
Yeah, Weta.
Ricky Weta. This goes, my mom got me a waterproof, fireproof, hurricane proof safe a number of years ago. And she said, you know, hey, I'm getting you this so you can put all of your important paperwork, documents, all the things like that in it.
Yep.
It's still in the box up against the wall near my closet. And the reason why is not laziness. No. That's no. The reason why is I don't know where 90% of the paperwork is, but there's a security measure in my own ignorance. First off, you couldn't torture that information on me.
Yep.
Second off, if you broke in my house and one of the 1 hour a week that I'm not home to find all of the shit to start a new life as a pro wrestler, guess what? You're out of luck, Jack. You can't fucking do it because not even I know where that paperwork is. Birth certificate? Ha 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 ha. You fool. I haven't seen that in ages.
I haven't seen that in 35 years.
Joke's on you, bitch. But if you do find it, could you put it back in the safe here? The keys are left, right, in the open.
Can you just tell me when I was born? I don't remember. Yeah, please.
Please?
I don't know.
It's been a while.
Well, him and Kindred got married in 1977. And so I want to say he got married under Ricky Allen Weta, too. So she technically married her second cousin.
Fuck yeah. A Weta wedding. What was her fake name, though?
She didn't have a fake name because she wasn't under indictment.
Oh, well, that's sus. I thought they both stole the info, didn't they?
They stole her second cousin's info just for him because she didn't have any problems. She wasn't indicted on anything. It was all him. So
I don't know, but at that point, she's like in pretty deep. Maybe she was also faking being her second cousin. So really, it was her second cousin.
Oh my God.
Yeah, himself.
I just.
It was a Weta wedding. Wedding.
It's a Weta Weta wedding.
Weta Weta.
Well, prior to the first day of the trial, both Kindred and Jerry moved to Miami. Then they went to Puerto Rico.
That's what you do.
The FBI. Yeah, right. That's kind of where you should go. The beautiful place. Easy.
What year is this?
1977.
Oh fuck, dude! They went to Miami in 1977.
Oh, this is the best years to go to Miami.
Oh, dude, that is, we've all seen the documentary Scarface.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is literally the best time you could be going to Miami. I know cocaine has to come in the story at some point.
I don't think it does, actually.
Huh.
Yeah. I mean, it's not mentioned.
It's assumed.
Yeah.
He's probably doing a bunch
of steroids at this time, too, and a bunch of cocaine, so.
Are you reading this story and assuming they're breathing air? Yes.
Yes.
Okay, same thing. They went to Miami in the 70s. They were breathing cocaine.
Oh, for sure.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, gotcha. The FBI showed up to court, and lo and behold, he wasn't there. So they started.
All I see is a Mr. Weta.
Yeah, I just see Weta. I don't get it. Weta? So they started tracking him, of course. But they couldn't freaking find his whereabouts, which is just so dumb.
1977 Apple AirTag, or at that time Macintosh, like AirTag. It's just like literally the size of a one-story house attached to the car.
To the car. We got him. We got him.
We got
Nobody
him.
Knows.
Boop. Yeah. Boop. Just a giant light on the top of
it's
it.
It's just a light, and that's how they find him. Well, he effectively became a ghost. Well, throughout this time, he performed in the Bahamas for the National Wrestling Alliance, so he's not really a ghost. But he's going under Weta still, so it's hard to find him. And I can imagine that he wasn't recognized because he was wearing masks and he was under the pseudonym, his new name.
Mr. Y.
Yeah, Mr. Y. And to be fair, honestly, this was the 70s. It really wasn't as easy to catch people at this time. The security cameras were not connected to the internet. There's no cell phones. There's no bank tracking as much. They still can do bank tracking, but if he just gets a... I mean, he had his new stuff, so his new ID, so he can just open a new bank account, so it's not that big of a deal. Well, in the Bahamas in 1978, they informed Jerry that his visa would not be renewed, and he and his wife had to go back to the U.S. Yeah, they were just like, get out. They were getting tired of him, honestly.
Stop
so they ended up, he ended up moving to Seattle, Washington, and he got a job at Boeing.
Okay, so this makes sense.
This is going to be so horrible. He falsified his transcript, saying that he had a degree from the University of Cambridge in England.
I mean, shit, at this point, you've ate... Where did he start again? It was somewhere in the Midwest.
Biloxi, Mississippi.
Okay, nowhere near the Midwest. But no, he started in Biloxi, South. Mississippi, went on to Tampa, where he faked a life. Honestly, he was faking a life as an amateur wrestler. Like, let's be real. That's what he was honestly doing. He wasn't faking a life as a professional. He was a professional faking a life as an amateur.
Literally,
to which he got caught more or less through bad checks already touring in the Caribbean.
Yeah.
Already fucking touring in the Caribbean. All of this in relation to starting a motorcycle shop.
Dude, some of the stuff that happened in this guy's life is going to blow your mind, too.
Now the motherfucker is working for Boeing. Probably, and I'm no expert, but I'm going to say I know this, probably making the parts on the planes you're flying on right now while you listen
to this. Did you read my script earlier?
Those parts, which were supposed to be amateur, are actually professional, which means they're actually fake.
He worked there for a year, so definitely some of the parts that he worked on or helped design are on planes that we fly on today.
Yes, I love this dude. I love this dude.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say it.
Very interesting. Well, they after the year, they found out he forged his transcripts, obviously. They figured...
Who the fuck?
I don't know how they revisited it.
Did HR look into it after a year? Who does that?
I don't know. Like, and that's what's weird is they eventually found it and were just like, what is this? This guy didn't go to, he didn't go to Cambridge.
He's just like tapping a rake with a cane, just like, yeah, make a good wing if you asked me. And they're like, that doesn't sound right.
Yeah, I'm sure that after a while they started looking through it and was like, this doesn't seem right. This guy's.
It seems the cock wheels aren't exactly lined up with the wing pits. We're going to need to fix that on this flight plan.
They're all just there pretending just like, so nobody knows it's... they're all just pretending so nobody knows he's faking it, so they're just agreeing with him. He's the smartest man in the company.
God damn it, the man's a genius. But, like, I'm a huge advocate of fake it till you make it. And this guy...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I
new hero. I need to get one of his posters, honestly.
To be fair, I don't think that's the kind of job we should be allowing people to fake it till they make it. I feel like them and doctors.
How many fucking presidents have we had that meet this exact criteria? I don't need to name them. You already got them in your heads. How many presidents faked it till they made it out of office? Okay, like, I'm just saying.
How many presidents are we at now? 65?
66. No, 66. 40,
46. Oh, 40. I was way off. Yeah, then I would say somewhere around that same number. So
yeah, there are more episodes of this show than there have been presidents.
That's true. Crazy.
We win.
We do.
Anyways.
Well, after that, after he got let go, he started moving around, still under his new name. So he wasn't obviously going back. What would turn out to be a crazy turn of events, and we should know this because we do this kind of stuff. We talk about this stuff all the time. In January of 1979, a Time magazine cover will be printed of the Jonestown Massacre.
What?
Well, Marjorie, who's, we as remember as Jerry's mom, right, saw this and immediately thought, that's my son and his family dead on the ground.
What?
She swore she saw him on the cover in the picture with, like, we'll post it in the show notes too, of the front page of the dead bodies. And so she called the Department of State's Jonestown Task Force to identify the bodies of her family. And so after a bit of time, after some of the autopsies are done, they kind of like were like looking at the photos, looking at the stuff. Yeah. They let her know that none of the bodies were even remotely close to what she described, nor did any of the dental records match.
His mom ratted him out. That is the most mom move to rat somebody out.
Well, this is not even the end, though. This is not even the end of this part of the story. Okay. She sent them an x-ray of the pin in Jerry's hips because she's like, go look into detail and see if there's a person that has a pin in the hip, because that's
Keep it next to his baby teeth. Yeah,
well,
she has an x-ray.
She probably has a lot, yeah. Which
inside
of
the safe.
Yeah, and which we'll say they were murdered. These people at Jonestown were murdered. I don't believe that that was suicide. I believe that he murdered them emotionally and mentally. So we can get that out.
Yeah.
But, you know, she wanted to see if there was the pin in the body of any of the bodies because of the motorcycle accident. The State Department said they couldn't look into the bodies again because of the shape the bodies were already in, because they were lying in the Guyanese hot sun for a few days after they had committed suicide, after they were murdered.
Yeah.
This story did become big news, and she got into kind of a word war in the press, blaming the State Department for withholding information and was frustrated for not IDing the body.
Oh, shit.
They responded saying to her, you'd think she would be thanking us instead of damning us, because they kept telling her that's not her son.
Is this the one time the State Department didn't fuck up? They were like,
they were doing a good job.
we looked into it for you, lady. We really took your concern seriously. And it's not him. It's really not.
Yeah. And one thing that stood out to me that she said too, like this is one of the things that I was like, in the press, she said, I have insurance policies of all kinds that I cannot cash in until I have a death certificate or certificate of presumed death. She also said that to the press.
This whole check forgery thing, this is like a family heritage. You kind of left that part out.
Well, it's how the story is told, my friend.
Love it. I love it.
After the State Department brought all the bodies back, Marjorie convinced her son was dead, and I just did quotations around convinced, made a tombstone that said, damn the State Department on it.
Okay, I'm not going to lie.
It's pretty badass, right?
I kind of want that.
As your tombstone?
On my tombstone, yeah.
Damn the State Department.
This is a verbal will right now to everybody in podcast land. I do want a tombstone that just says, damn the State Department. Yeah.
Well, at the funeral, the FBI surveilled it just to see if he would come and show up. Well, he didn't, obviously. Well, after a few years of looking for Jerry, the FBI just gave up because they were just like, maybe he died in Guyana. I don't really care anymore. So they, very important thing that happened. They dropped all of the charges against him.
Boom! You can win if you just keep trying.
If you just keep waiting. So his mom, Marjorie, she died in 1983, and I'm putting in quotations, still believing he was dead, because he never ended up talking to her after that. Well, 6 years after his mother's death, all was quiet until one, in quotations, 34-year-old Richard Weta was arrested in Seattle for attempted murder
of an entire plane full of people after he super glued popsicle sticks to the side of the plane for repair.
Yeah. Well, come to find out, while he was quiet throughout the years, he was committing various scams and illegal activities. In 1988, he was arrested on suspicion of committing arson for purposes of getting insurance money on a hotel he had bought. For some reason, he was never ID'd as Jerry Balasag, even though they took his fingerprints.
At what point aren't you happy? Like, is the world not enough? Is two people's worlds not enough?
Yeah.
You've got a career at Boeing.
Yep.
Yeah. Goddamn.
Well, it continues. In 1989, he was arrested for shooting one Emmett Thompson Jr.
Why?
So he was a business partner and apparently they had a disagreement. He shot him in the head during target practice.
What?
This kind of sounds a little Cheney-esque, doesn't it? During the trial, they found out he wasn't who he said he was because he was still going as Richard Weta. Because his fingerprints did not match the original Richard Weta, they called him John Doe the whole trial because they couldn't figure out who he was. So
damn it, now there's a third person.
Yeah, right? So he's got his third thing. But the reason they found out he wasn't Richard Weta is because Richard Weta had got a charge against him like about 5 or 6 years before this.
Yeah.
And they matched up the fingerprints saying like, this is not the guy that this is this guy. Like, it's not Richard Weta. This is Richard Weta.
Yeah, I was wondering what the fuck happened to Richard
Weta. He just went along, I guess, and just kept going. But I mean, they probably just didn't, you know, why would they be investigating this guy, right? So like, yeah. If you give nobody suspicion on investigating you, it's very hard for somebody to catch you. You know what I mean?
Truth. Yeah.
So it's a little Black Cat Report advice there.
I live my life by that advice.
True. Well, he was found guilty of murder.
Okay.
But he actually got acquitted of the arson charge that kind of started kind of that hotel thing.
Yeah.
So he kind of got away with one. So here's where we might think it ends, right? Guy's in jail and dies there.
Okay.
Well, his trial gets overturned.
Oh.
Because of lacking of motive, he gets out of jail. Then Washington Supreme Court, 2 years later, enacts the original sentence, and he goes back to jail. This time for 13 years.
How is that not double jeopardy?
No, it's not. You can flip it because they're not technically trying it again. He's just going up to the next court.
Because it's a different name.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think if you just keep going, it's just like if you're trying... stuff that goes to the Supreme Court all the time, if it keeps going
it becomes city,
that kind
county
of thing.
State, federal. Yep. Yeah, yeah. Yep. Gotcha.
Yep.
Okay.
Supreme.
Okay.
Yep. Well, yeah. Kendra divorced him as soon as he went to jail originally. So his wife was done. Deborah Kendra was like, nope, I'm done.
In all fairness, she stuck with him through a lot.
She did a good job, yeah. Through all of the scams. But after so he gets out after 13
she
years.
She married her cousin for this. Yeah.
True. Yeah. After 13 years, he gets out. So he married two different women in successive short stints. So 4 to 6 months of marriage to each one.
Check the photos. It was the same woman.
Yeah, yeah. And both divorced him on a basis of physical abuse.
So, oh.
Yeah. Well, his next scheme, because he's not done, he to embezzle $4.6 million from Cox and Comcast cable companies, but was quickly caught when he opened a bank account that diverted the money came into afterwards. So basically, he had one level of a bank account. It went to a mutual trust bank account and then to his bank account he opened under his name.
So he literally was just like, and here's the money and transfer.
Yeah, literally.
That wasn't even like money laundering. That was just like moving the laundering from like the bed to the basket.
It was money washing your hands.
Yeah.
His next scheme, he tried to embezzle $4.6 million from Cox and Comcast Cable Company, but was quickly caught when he opened a bank account that diverted the money that it came into afterwards. So basically, he created one level of separation that's like so easy to track.
See the money over there? Yeah? Yeah? Look over there. Aha! Now
it's gone.
It's gone. Yeah. He did a cup and balls game where there was only two cups.
Yep.
He was like,
it was the stupidest shit ever. It was so dumb. And I can't believe it.
Jesus.
He actually, okay, so this is stupid. They quickly shut the bank account down, right? So they figured it out super quick. They froze the account.
Of course.
Well, he still got $500,000 from it.
Okay, not a bad scam.
So pretty solid. Yeah, pretty solid. So once he found out the bank account was frozen, he's like, screw it, go in another country. Again.
Yeah.
So he decided to flee to Nicaragua and hide out again. He's there, 2003-ish. So about 6 years later, he ends up marrying a native Nicaraguan woman in 2009. So
okay.
Then he gets arrested in 2013.
Uh-oh.
Go figure. For crimes related to sexual exploitation of minors.
Ooh.
And he was sentenced to 24 years in prison.
Okay. Well, good.
So he actually, and again, he's getting his third pseudonym going. He changed his name to Harrison Reigns Hanover.
I really don't know how that doesn't make you stand out in Nicaragua.
I don't know why he did it. I mean, I guess he's still trying to get past the other part of his life, and like, so he doesn't get notified as this that guy. Well, yeah. In less than a year in jail, he was rushed to the hospital and died of a heart attack due to the heat in the prisons. But, and I don't know if this is just because of the Nicaraguan jail and how it works, but there was never a death certificate, or is the place of his burial known. The only headstone that he is ever going to have is one that says, "Damn the State Department." So who knows? Maybe he's still out there.
Even if they're shit bags and were convicted on some really fucked up things, some people go down as legends. I'm applauding it.
Yep. I mean, the only thing that he really, I mean, he did a few things wrong, you know, the sexual exploitation of minors. Yeah, but quite a bit. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he did some crazy stuff.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
as we go into a wrestler, we're going to try to jump across the pond to merry old England. Honestly, I don't know why I always do that voice. One time I was working with a British guy, and, he has the normal English accent, and I was saying something random, and then I did the old British accent. I don't know what I said. I was like, "Roy, it's Harry Potter," and then I like looked at him because I realized he was there also and knew he was British. And I just like, "I'm sorry," and he just shook his head at me, and I was like, "I'm so sorry. I feel so bad that I said that."
You managed to be Joey. That's a whole nother level of things, which is hilarious because you're not like this, but you were so opposite on so many ends. You managed to be racist against a British person. Do you know how hard that is?
I'm pretty sure 100% of the world would be fine with that, though. So that's fine.
Yeah, no, like, no. And like, yo, my last name is Bentley. Although as of 2024, I'm changing it to Gently, Bilbert Gently.
Well, you still got a day and a half under.
I got a
Gilbert
day and a half. It's 11:38 p.m. on December 30th, 2023, at the time of this recording.
Yep.
The last few hours, I'm known as Gilbert Bentley, but I'm British as fuck.
Pretty much.
Be racist as you want towards me.
Yeah.
Totally cool. Totally earned it. 100% support. I'm just saying. You managed to offend a British person not because of how you mixed your biscuits with your tea. No.
Right.
But through pure old-fashioned racism. And I'm giving you
the thumbs up.
British tooth gold-colored star of just like, bam, right
Thank
there
you.
On
Thank
your
you.
Chest.
I did it. I am happy for doing it. And I will continue doing that voice probably for a long, long time. Because it's the only British accent I can do at this moment.
You've
and it's only a few words.
And Matthew McConaughey. That's your two
To accents. Some people, that's the world. L-I-V-I-N, man. Living.
What the
Well, let's get into the story. The man's name was John Darwin. I don't know if anyone you can see this, but Gilbert is literally covering his mouth laughing. So I will continue. He was a former teacher and a prison officer, so in England. And on March 21st in 2002, John Darwin was last seen paddling a kayak out into the sea in the Seton Carew area. So Seton Carew area is like a small little area close to the North Sea, so it's like kind of leads out. This guy was 51 at this time, and people found he was missing because he didn't show up to work for his night shift at the jail. So, naturally, people started searching for him, but couldn't find anything.
Mm.
It was noted that the sea was actually unusually calm at this time of the year, so the people searching thought it was very weird that he would go missing. The next day, they found his double-ended paddle and a wrecked canoe, but obviously they didn't find John Darwin. It has to be said that John had ran up a few debts before this, buying two properties in the area, but he, kind of stop being able to afford it.
Mm.
After a while, he was presumed to be dead. Well, this idiot moved in next door to his wife in a small, what they call a bed sit. Okay. I don't know if you know this term, but I didn't. So I looked it up.
I can imagine.
Yeah, right. And eventually moved back in with his wife a year or two after that, too. Well, I just want to say a bed sit is kind of like a dorm room thing, right?
Uh huh.
So it's like a one room per person, but you share a bathroom. So
it's quite literally a place where you can sit your bed.
Yeah, that's Literally the name of it. That's very British to do that. You know, just to name it the most simple thing.
That's an ass spot. It's where you put your ass. That it just makes sense.
Well, that same year he was pronounced dead, his wife Anne Darwin cashed in his life insurance policy for the tune of about £250,000.
Good job, Anne.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
A funny story during that time, too, was that a friend of John's who was staying in one of the neighboring bedsits to his recognized him and asked him, "Aren't you supposed to be dead?"
Hey, John. Oh, you're doing good. You want some ketchup with your eggs, yeah? Don't take me as rude. I thought you were dead, man.
You can guess what he told him, he was like, "Don't tell anyone about this," and just walked off. He didn't say anything else. He just left.
Came back, got salt for his eggs, put it on top, kept walking.
Yeah, right. So a few years passed by. Well, he's mostly literally just poking around on the internet.
He's literally where he's supposed to be, even though he's dead.
Yes.
Let's put this in perspective. He is within the address code of his house.
Yep.
Right. He's literally right there. He's like, "Nope, I'm just going to walk around here. Yep. No, don't look at me. I'm dead." Wink.
Yeah. Yep. He was an old English ghost. So he just poke around the internet. He did go meet some woman in the U.S., and there was no reason for it, so it was very weird.
He had No. You can't jump over that part. So he went from England, right, from the U.K., to the United States. The only way he could have done that is with a passport. But he was dead. Okay, I'm just making sure I'm keeping up. This dude
sucks.
You are
keeping up. Yeah.
This dude sucks at being dead.
He was going under the name John Williams, besmirching the name of one of the best composers of all time. And if you don't know who John Williams is, he did the original Star Wars themes in composing. So he's great. I think he did the new ones too. So he's an amazing composer. Well, he did make a few trips out of the house to check out potentially buying a catamaran. And buying some properties in Cyprus. So, yeah, he's going overseas. I'm sure Anne and John got bored, so they thought of heading somewhere else, you know, away from merry old England. They ended up choosing Panama.
Okay.
And flew there in July of 2006. Probably much cheaper, much easier. They can get away with stuff.
They can go left, they can go right. They're good.
Easily.
Either way, they can get away, left or right.
Yeah. Well, they stayed for a few weeks and decided this is where we'll start our new life. They formed a company in Panama called Jaguar Properties so they could purchase a hotel.
Dope name.
And do canoe trips in a package
deal.
I don't know if you know how ironic that is. Yeah.
And their first customer was a wrestler who was originally from Mississippi.
I can imagine that. I mean, honestly, he does not have the best track records with canoe trips. I mean, you know.
I would not trust this motherfucker with anything.
No. Well, in 2007, his visa was up, and their passports needed to be verified by the UK police before they could get what are called investors' visas. And this was actually a law change recently. That's why they had to get investors' visas to invest in the hotel, to start buying up properties, which they did.
Damn it, Brexit. So,
yeah, right. He also wanted to return to England because he also, by the way, they had sons. So he also missed
his
sons. So Anne bought him a ticket back to England, you know, the very place they were trying to run from. By the way, his sons still think he's dead.
How is he using his passport for any of this?
He has another passport he got. I don't know how he got it. I don't know how he got the passport.
Is he using one of his son's passports? Like, what's going on here?
I don't know. He just got another passport. There was never mentioned in any of the stories that I was reading and doing research.
Jesus. It was acquired in Miami or Tampa, Florida, around there. Yeah.
Somewhere in that time. Somewhere in the 70s.
Who keeps taking all my shit? Mom, I need a safe.
Yeah, buy me a safe. So John Darwin decided the only way to get himself out of this jam was to go into the police station and say that he had amnesia for the last 5 years and didn't know what happened. And he went in as himself.
Always works. That always works.
He did that on December 1st in 2007.
Hell yeah.
Well, a funny thing had already happened before this. a family friend overhearing Anne talking to someone on the phone, very much sounding like John, taking holidays and buying up properties in other countries, notified the police of the suspicion that John was still alive.
Oh.
She did this in September. So 2 months before he waltzed into the police station ranting about having amnesia. So the police are already looking into him.
Oh, shit.
When he did this. And he's just like, la-di-da, no one knows. Oh, my God, I'm alive. I'm alive. Oh, my goodness. And it comes in there, and they're just like, dude, okay.
I love this man.
Well, the story broke wide open for the police when a company called the Daily Mirror posted a photo of John and Anne in Panama that was taken in 2006 by a Panamanian property agent when they were looking at houses. It was just a literal photo of them three together, the Panamanian property agent.
5 years after walking into the police station
Well, 2007 was when he walked in the police station. The photo was taken in 2006. Somebody
found
it.
Okay, so a year earlier.
By searching Google Images, John, Anne, and Panama, it popped up, and they sent it to the Daily Mirror, and the police were just like, oh, this is super easy. You're obviously not dead. You defrauded an insurance company.
We're literally not working.
yeah. Like this, we don't have to do any work on this. So they were convicted of fraud and sent to jail. They both ended up having to pay back $541,762.49 to the insurance company. So, lesson here.
Damn.
Don't mess with insurance companies. Also, if you fake your own death, don't literally stay right next to your wife who was in on the scam with you, and don't get any pictures with people.
Legally speaking, since you are allowed to fake your own death, right, 100%, there's no laws against it.
No, there's none. No. Yep.
No. Just keep going.
Yeah,
just
do it. The only like we said last time, the only problem with it is the fraud that usually comes before faking your own death. It's usually the reason you fake your own death is to get rid of the fraud from before.
'Tis the reason for the treason. All right, let's go.
Well, this next guy, compared to the other two, the other guys were kind of shitty people.
Oh, yeah.
I kind of like this guy.
Okay.
And he reminds me of the guy from the last episode who faked their own death, our old friend Timothy Dexter. This guy's name is Clement John DeGuerris, or better known as CJ DeGuerris. Born on the 22nd of November in 1884, so we're going a little back farther, in North Melbourne, Australia. His father ran a dried fruit business, and when he was young, it was struggling. So, I mean, it's kind of boring business, but I guess if you're in it, it's fine. Not to anybody who does dried fruit business, because I'm pretty sure it's very profitable and it's probably doing great things, you know? Well, when DeGuerris went off to college, the business was doing a little better. But DeGuerris was, you know, they didn't have much money still, so he paid his own way through college by working his ass off. He came back to his father's business, and within 18 months of managing part of the business, he tripled the sales figures of the company.
Damn.
18 months.
Okay,
yeah,
okay.
He's a killer guy. Smart guy. Well, at 21... he was given the sole ownership of the whole company. This guy was crushing it, right? He started seeing himself, though, as more than just a sun-dried businessman, though. And in 1920, he created the Great Australian Novel Competition, which was won by a Frank A. Russell with Ashes of Achievement.
Hold up. Did this dude start the whole fucking novel scam?
No.
Can we do an episode about him? Because
the guy who started it?
They owe me $30. Anyways,
I'm pretty sure I got sucked into a songwriting thing that just took my song and didn't give anything back. I paid $15 for it. So we're owed $45 by these people already. So
why is Nicki Minaj singing my song, sir?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if she would sing it, but who knows, right? So, well, after doing that, he then wrote a mystery musical comedy for the theater called FFF.
I would watch that.
Yeah, right? It's not abbreviating anything. It was the first mystery musical comedy of its kind, apparently. It was billed as that.
I fucking love it.
It sounds fun.
I'm here for that shit. Yeah.
He's a businessman, right? Still a businessman, but he still loved the arts. So for the premiere, he timed it with an advertising campaign for Sunray Seed Fruits, which was his company. So smart business, right?
Okay.
He even sent theater bills out to everyone in the literal phone book in Perth.
Okay, that's a lot of postage.
Like, that's time, right? Well, sadly, the run was a disaster and he lost a lot of money out of this. Though it did produce two hit songs, which is kind of funny. A song called Murray Moon and Sleep Seas. I don't know, they're the theatrical songs from the 1920s, so.
Kind of here for that.
Yeah, yeah. I did actually search for versions of songs and I couldn't find them because I did want to try to play and see if we could listen to it, but maybe I'll find them eventually and get them in the show notes. Well, he also wrote and published a bunch of short stories and then a war drama called Ambition Run Mad, and it was basically a war drama about the World War One.
Okay.
Yeah, it's pretty good. And so he's like, this guy is super artsy, you know, even though he's a good businessman too, he's great. He also wrote a book in 1925, which is awesomely called Victories of Failures. I think that's a very cool name for a book.
Yo.
And it's an autobiography, too.
A lot of people forget there's two sides to a tombstone. Uh-huh. Okay, there's two sides. A lot of people, technically, one, two, three, four, there's five sides. Six if you're counting the bottom. A lot of people forget about that.
Yeah, true. But you don't see it.
On one side, you know, fuck the State Department.
Yeah, damn right? The State Department. Yeah.
Damn, I'm going to say fuck. But sure. I don't want to break any copyrights.
You're a little more colorful.
Not in death.
You know.
Yeah. So fuck the State Department. No asterisks, nothing. It's just fuck the State Department.
Yeah.
The other side.
Times New Roman.
Yeah, Times New Roman. Yeah. Victory of failure. Or failure of victory. Well, Victories of failures. And it's just going to be the year I was born and the year I died.
Dude, so good. So good. I mean, honestly, that name is so good. And it was an autobiography, too. So it was kind of like his life. And
I love it.
Yeah, it was great. So the one of the things I love this guy so much more for, and I think you'll love him for, he exposed a very big fraud.
Oh.
Yeah. So, which is kind of ironic, actually, in the end of it, but a journalist named G.H. Cochran, or better known as Grant Hervey, he basically started a scheme to start a whole new state and instill him as the leader in Australia. He wanted to secede from the state of Victoria and nearly completed it, but in swept de Garris to expose him. He did it in such a cool way, right? So...
Okay.
Badass fashion. On the night of the meeting to vote on the proposal to form the new state and succeed from the state of Victoria and install him as the leader, de Garris showed up and exposed him to the whole crowd.
What?
The real name of this guy and that he had been in jail previously for fraud. Hervey, the fraud guy, then tried to open up a full newspaper just to smear de Garris. That was the like level of pettiness. But what was so cool about the town, they said, nah, screw that. They tarred and feathered Hervey and sent him out of town. They were like, get this guy out of town.
Holy sh!
He did keep running. Even though he got tarred and feathered, he did keep running that newspaper, but it wasn't another town.
I do admire that.
Yeah, and but the guy, I think you would like it because this guy was a super right-wing politician, Hervey was, and he was trying to like basically make
the
it.
The one who got tarred and feathered.
Yeah, the guy tarred and feathered.
Okay,
so,
I was
so,
like,
yeah.
Wait, what?
No, de Garris was I don't know if he was liberal or Republican, I don't know, but he was just a good guy. It seemed like he was
anti-fraud.
A good person. Anti-fraud.
He was anti-fraud at this point in his career, yeah.
Yeah, and okay. If all this wasn't enough, de Garris started an aviation company.
Okay.
Like, all this crazy stuff. Basically, what kind of sucked though about the aviation company, it was literally just for him to fly back and forth to his business ventures and meetings, but he did it. So he didn't make any money off of it.
Gotta do what you gotta do.
But this last thing was the one that would drive him to do what he did, to fake his own death, right? So he was doing great. You know, the whole dried fruit company was doing so amazing. And he was like, okay, I want to open up another factory in a new town. And so he started building this whole, basically building a whole town for his employees. And he got a few investors, right?
Yes.
To build this, a massive dehydrator in another town. He had the investors on board and the money in place. But in the last second, the investors pulled out and left Daguerreus with an insurmountable debt.
Oh, man.
And even with all the success he had, he couldn't pay it.
Shit.
After that, even worse, he got brought up on charges of fraud by the Royal Commission because they thought he was defrauding the investors out of money and using investors' money to do personal endeavors, which he was eventually exonerated. But his reputation was destroyed, and he fell into a deep depression.
Sad Aussie.
Man, it's really sad, yeah.
Yeah.
This guy just wanted to do good, and he just kind of had a shitty end of it. So on January 5th in 1925, he sent about 70 suicide letters to family and friends.
Jesus.
Yeah. Well, he had a lot of family and friends, I guess. And then he faked his own death by faking drowning in Port Phillip Bay.
Yep. I'm probably not going to make it out of this one. Oh, at a gator. That a gator? Might be a stick. it's a gator. I don't know if I'm going to make it over here.
Yeah. I don't know. I think he just said that he was drowning or he was going to go drown himself or something like that. It was really stupid. But after that, not more than a week later, he was found on a ship bound for New Zealand. It was like super
easy.
By
the way, it was like a half an hour ride.
Yeah.
But I just want to throw
it was not that far. And he was just found on a ship. I think they were still looking at him because of, you know, they thought he was a bad check writer too as well. So like there was like a weird, they're still looking for him. Super dumb. But it was said that he was such a smooth talker and that when the police officer was arresting him, he sold a property to the police officer who was arresting him while he was being apprehended.
It just sucks that you're getting me like this. No, it's fine. It's fine, mate. It's okay. My chin can be down here like that. Yeah. It just, you know, I really hate to say this, but I was on my way to make the land deal of a century, of a century, of a century. How do you do that? How the fuck do you? You had to seduce the officer. Like that got to a level of sexual energy.
Yep.
You had to seduce the officer to straight up buy into this. Unless the officer was undercover at your timeshare meeting. There's, and you both.
Oh, that's a great idea.
You both convinced the officer at the undercover, you know, timeshare meeting, but didn't convince the people that were listening in with the bug. You know, like, how do you do that?
Yeah, he was
this
just
guy's
that
a
good.
Genius.
Yeah,
he's a genius.
As much as he was just great, sadly, after all this happened, he couldn't live with himself, and he actually committed suicide by gassing himself on August 17th, 1926.
Wait, what's gassing yourself?
He asphyxiated himself in a, I think, a garage.
Oh, that's not cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. So he just, like, carbon monoxide. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is really sad because this guy was great. He was also going through a divorce at this time, too. And because of all the reputation problems, because he was losing money, and his wife divorced him at around this time, too. So it was about, I think, 9 months after he was arrested, or about a year and a half after he was arrested and still dealing with stuff. So he kind of just... super sad. I honestly just liked him so much because what do they say, pulled himself up by the bootstraps. I guess he kind of made his dad's company.
When did he fake his death?
And he faked his own death in 1925, I want to say.
I don't even remember when he faked his own death. He was just so legit his whole fucking life.
Yeah, it sucks. It's terrible. He faked his own death in 1925, killed himself in 1926.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
About a year.
So he called him Mulligan.
Yeah.
He called him
Mulligan basically.
Early in life.
Yeah, he did. Then he actually did it.
Maybe he didn't.
No, they found his body. He was actually dead. So, yeah, they actually found his body.
Did they?
Yeah, they did. They found his body, and that was the end of the story. He was buried. I mean, yeah, true. Did he just get better at it? Well, I really loved of his business motives, and I think he was my favorite one, and exploiting that really white right-wing politician as a fraudster in just such a funny and epic fashion. Though, to be fair, he kind of just defrauded himself of a life, I guess, in a certain way, which is kind of sad. So, but yeah. Well, thanks so much for listening to the Black Cat Report. We hope you have a wonderful New Year's. Have a wonderful holiday time thingy, and we love you.
Bye.
Bye. like a good boyfriend.
State Farm is there.